Welcome to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Jason, and I'll be your guest host today. I am honored to be here with a voice that you might find familiar. Your regular Mormon Expression Voices host, Katrine. Some listeners have been asking Katrine to share her faith transition story, and I'm privileged to be the one to be able to interview her. Welcome to your show, Katrine.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be here.
I'm glad that you could make it.
It's late at night. We're here recording this. I'm sure everyone will be so happy to hear us talk some more.
Yes. If you're still listening.
I'm so sorry.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad to finally put my story out there. It's only fair, I guess. And I've had people asking me to do it. So hopefully I won't disappoint.
All right. So have they been curious about just about what the story is behind the new hostess with the mostess?
Yeah, everyone has a story. Mm-hmm. That's why I do this. Mm-hmm. And I have a story. And we've been working on it slowly.
We have, over months.
We're so pathetic.
No, you know, we're busy people. So, great. Well, I, for one, have to say that I'm really glad that you made this faith transition. I've always liked to think I was supportive of you in your decisions with the church, but I guess there was a little part of me that would have kind of secretly hoped maybe someday, but actually when you told me you weren't going to church anymore, I was very, very surprised.
You were probably shocked too, right?
I was totally shocked. I never saw that coming, ever.
Neither did I.
All right. So what could possibly make that happen? Before we get into that though, let's talk a little bit about your childhood growing up in Utah Valley in the 80s.
Yes, the 80s. Mm-hmm. Well, it was just like every other good little Mormon girl, except for the crazy father part.
Right.
But I really, really liked church. I'm one of those strange people that really looked forward to it, enjoyed it, loved every bit of it, loved sharing time. Loved primary, loved young women's, loved girls camp, just loved it. It was my identity. It was what made me feel special, mm-hmm. what made me feel important. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a popular person. I was a wallflower. Mm-hmm. But at church, for some reason, I felt like I had a little place to shine, maybe even if it was only in my own head. Mm-hmm. But it was me. That's what I did. And I loved it.
Was there any part of you at all growing up where you said to yourself, what? Or what's that? Or why? Or I'm not sure about that.
Nothing.
As far as the mainstream
not really.
Church.
The only thing people would say, like, every member needs to get their own testimony someday. And I would be like, oh, well, maybe I need to do that. And I would be, well, that's silly. I love it. I go to church. I have a testimony. Of course I do. So it was never even like, it didn't even send off any alarm bells or anything. Just that's what you did. I never questioned it ever.
All right. So you were
devoted.
Very devoted. Very devoted. So how is it then that a devoted girl in the LDS church ends up with such a scandal on her hands at the age of, what, 19?
Yes, 19. Mm-hmm. Well, I fell in love, jumped in bed, just kidding. It didn't happen that way. I met my future husband, and he was a return missionary, very good boy too, and we ended up having sex, and, you know, it's just such a weird place to be because you're taught that that is the wrong thing to do. Don't ever do it. But of course, you know what? It doesn't feel wrong. You kind of enjoy it. And mm-hmm. I was in love, and I did end up getting pregnant. And that was a hard thing to face.
Were you shocked? Were you surprised? Or had you been like fearful that, oh no, this is going to happen?
You know, it's pretty sad. My Mormon upbringing, there came a point where my husband and I, well, my boyfriend at the time, we thought we knew it was going to lead somewhere. And he wanted to buy some condoms. And in my head, I was like, if we buy condoms, that means we're going to do it.
Intent.
Mm-hmm. It felt better to leave it up to chance than to plan for it. Because it meant that I was going to sin.
Uh-huh.
I know it seems so backward. But
so you shouldn't plan your sins. It's better to have an unplanned sin than a planned sin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right.
I know. Sad. Yeah. But that's
so it was all your fault.
It was all my fault. Well, he helped.
Well.
He was there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So. How long after you were pregnant before you told anybody? And actually, before we talk about that, how, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong were your guilt feelings?
Well, they were strong. They were very strong. Lots of shame. You know, I had always been taught, if you ever commit a sin or if you ever have a problem, you go to the bishop. Go to the bishop. He can help you. You can repent. Everything can be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. We went to the bishop. And we actually went to the bishop before I found out I was pregnant.
Oh.
We went and we said, this is what's happening. He was a really wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, well, we need to ask you to stop taking the sacrament. And I'd like to see you back in a week or two or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's what we'll do. So we went back. Well, between the two appointments, found out I was pregnant.
Mm.
And we went back to the bishop. And we said, well, we'd been engaged at this point. We said, well, we think we should get married because we're pregnant. And he said, you know, it's funny you said that because I was actually going to tell you that you should get married right away. He said, that's what I was going to tell you tonight. So let's go ahead with that.
Whether you were pregnant or not.
Yeah. Mm. He had already decided that we should get married right away.
Mm.
And in my head, I thought, wow, God loves me so much that he inspired this good man to tell us what we needed to do, that he knew that this was important, and that was the plan for us. Well, this funny thing happens. No one else felt that way.
Mm.
No one else would let me have that little miracle. It was a sin, and I should just feel awful.
Did anybody ever say to you, congratulations, that's so exciting?
Never.
Not once. Nobody.
Never. Not once.
Hmm.
So we told our parents, which was awful, and we started planning a shotgun wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And we threw it together in like a month, I think, or two. The bishop that we had been working with, we asked him to marry us, and he was kind and said he would do that. He said, okay, what we're going to do is before your reception, we'll meet in the Relief Society room. I want you sitting in the front two chairs. Your family can be in there, and then I'll have you come stand up. And he said, I'll talk for a little bit, and then I'll ask you if you want to be man and wife, and you say yes. Don't say I do. Don't say anything else. Just say yes. And then I'll ask you to kiss. Just give each other a quick little kiss, and then your family can come and congratulate you, and then it'll be over. So there was no music. I was in a wedding dress, but it felt really silly in the Relief Society room.
Why not in the chapel?
Well, nobody gets married in the chapel, but in the cultural hall, couldn't do it.
You couldn't even do it in the cultural hall?
Well, I was never given the option. See, I never question anything. Never question anything.
Mm-hmm.
Thought, oh, this is just how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just humiliating. It was, because I wasn't even allowed the dignity to walk in the room. I mean, I just had to be sitting there waiting. And
all you could say through the whole thing was yes.
Yes. Couldn't even say, oh, I'm happy or I love you or anything. Just yes.
Nothing. And do you remember the words that he said? Did he, before you were man and wife, counsel you? Did he say anything at all about
the
beauty of your relationship?
I don't really remember. I know there was no talk of beauty of any kind.
Right.
It was more of a, this is what you need to do to have a happy marriage, stay in the church, be strong, work together. I mean, nothing bad, but certainly not uplifting something, not talking about happiness or, you know, that we'll be happy or anything.
Right.
No love. And it was for time. I pronounce you man and wife until death. It was just, like, you even used the word death. It wasn't even time. I pronounce you till death. And I was just like, huh. And then the family came up and gave me little hugs with little close smiles, half smiles. And it was just lame. And then
so it was a somber occasion for you?
It was somber. There was no happiness. Then we went and had the wedding, and in, you know, both sides of our family, they did try to give us what they could, and we had a wedding, but it was awful. It's just, John, my husband and I, we don't have any fond memories of our wedding. It was just sad.
Right.
Other than I appreciated people making an effort.
Sure. So would you say that motivated you to do the right thing after going through that somber, shaming experience, that was something that pushed you into wanting to achieve worthiness for the temple again?
You know, I can't even say it pushed me into it because I never didn't want it. I never thought it was unachievable. And I thought that my church leaders would direct me and teach me and lead me and guide me through this. Because that's what I told my whole life. Go to the bishop and he'll help you repent. You know, this will be good for you. You'll be happy. Instead, it was more like, if we tell anyone that you got pregnant and that you were later sealed in the temple, then they'll think it's okay that other people can do that. It'll let people think, oh, I can have sex because I can make it better later. It was more like, don't talk to anyone, don't tell anyone, don't discuss it with anyone. You know, I thought people would be happy when we did get sealed a year later. Nobody ever talked about it, ever. I had to go to our bishop and say, well, it's been a year. Nobody said, oh, you've repented. Hallelujah.
No one congratulated you.
Yeah.
You
made it. And I just thought, well, I guess God forgives me. Because I never felt like he was mad at me anyway.
Right.
So I'm like, I guess I can go to the temple because, you know, I guess that's what you do next.
So that's why you went, is because that's just what you do next.
Well, I wanted to.
And you wanted to still.
I did want to. I strongly believed that I, you know, my family would be together forever if I did that.
But you, between the time that you got married and the time that you were sealed, was there this sense like you had just lost the Holy Ghost and that you'd better shape up or ship out? Or, I mean, you said you didn't feel like you were bad.
No, and they tell you that if you sin, like, have sex, premarital sex, that you will lose the spirit. I never, ever felt that, ever. Yep. And I would even, like, do I feel it? Well, I don't feel different. Never felt unloved.
So you were sealed. And
we were sealed a year later. So first of all, we did have our daughter.
Right.
Who's amazing.
Wonderful.
And beautiful.
Wonderful.
And I even thought, you know what? How can something so beautiful come from something so horrible?
Right. Such a heinous sin that you committed, and yet she's been one of the biggest blessings of your whole life. So how?
So we did take her to the temple and we were sealed. And it was, you know, it was sweet. And
You didn't feel like it was a huge change, though? You didn't feel like, oh, no,
wasn't finally, like, yes,
no,
now.
It wasn't like angels came down or anything. Mm-hmm. Just
did that.
Just did it.
Moved on with your life.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, I can be together forever.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Check.
And then did you, after that point, as you went on, did you feel guilty about that anymore? Any amount of guilt? Or were you just like, okay, over it?
You know, I don't think it was even guilt. I think it was shame.
Shame.
Yeah. Deep shame that I've been horrible. I was, I let something horrible happen.
Yeah.
So that shame, I don't think people realize what a secretive place church is.
Mm-hmm.
It is full of secrets. I was the person that went to church every single Sunday. I took the sacrament. I fulfilled my callings the best I could. I loved church. Took my kids. And yet, I'd been taught early on from my first bishop's appointment that you do not talk about this. It is a secret. You do not discuss this. So, I'm not the only one out there. And their sin, whatever, isn't probably pregnancy or whatever. But that church, I promise you, that chapel is full of secrets.
Oh, absolutely.
Full of shame. And it's wrong. It's not right to put people in that position.
Nope. So then you moved on and you had the rest of your family, three little boys,
carried on the family tradition of one girl, all boys.
Uh-huh. And before you had all your boys, though, you moved to Texas. You mm-hmm. left Utah.
Yeah, when our daughter was 2 years old, my husband finished school in Logan, and we moved to Houston.
How different was that for you as far as the church goes?
Not that different, really. Well, in church, when you're in the church building, it wasn't that different. Church right. is church wherever
Still
you go.
Same. Right.
But as far as there were very few members, there were neighbors that were LDS.
Yeah.
So there wasn't this feeling of everyone, if you don't go to church on Sunday, everybody will know.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that. I'd have to drive 20 minutes or so to go to my visiting teaching. Our church was about a half hour away, 20, 30 minutes, depending, away. 20 minutes. So that was different. It just felt not as oppressive, I guess, because your neighbors weren't all members.
Right. So you enjoyed being Mormon more out of Utah?
Yeah, I guess so.
Perhaps?
Yeah. It was interesting to start to see it from outside perspectives.
Absolutely.
Like, when we first moved in, our neighbor came over and introduced himself, and we're talking about moving. He said, yeah, I helped my neighbor move a few weeks ago, and we went and started moving their stuff, and they had these big, huge barrels of beans. I was like, what are these beans for? And he said, it found out it was because they were Mormon and they believe in having a year food storage. And I'm like, that's weird. I had no idea that would be a weird thing. So mm-hmm. it was funny to see that. And it was like somebody once asked me what religion I was, and I said, oh, I'm Mormon. And she got this weird expression on her face. And I said, do you know what that is? And she's like, well, I just know David Koresh. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, no. So mm-hmm. it was just interesting that to me, everyone always knew what Mormon was, and they were probably Mormon. And now nobody really knew anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Another perspective was I had some friends that were talking about church, and they would say, oh, yeah, I went to this church for a little while, but I didn't like the minister one. So I went to this other one, and I liked it until they got the new youth leader and decided, we didn't want to take our kids there. So we went to this other church, and I'm like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
That is so bad.
No, you can't church hop.
Yeah, there's no church hopping.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, it was interesting to start getting different perspectives. Also learning that people and other religions believed as strongly as I did, had faith as strongly as I did, if not more, had testimonies. had spiritual experiences. Mm-hmm.
And they, at the same time, they drank coffee, perhaps?
They drank coffee and alcohol. Oh, they would bring their wine coolers outside on our driveway while we watched our kids. And they weren't drunk.
What?
Yeah. So, it was very... I loved my friends. I had the best friends in Texas, and I still miss them. Miss them a lot.
Yeah. Well, I've always said, even when I was LDS, I always said every Utah Mormon should move out of state at least for a little while, just because it's so different and it teaches you so many things. Even if you stay in the church forever, you'll come back to Utah with a completely different perspective, and I think you'll be a much healthier person for it. So I was glad that you went to Texas.
Yeah, it was good. We liked it. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
So then you moved back to Utah.
Well, I do want to talk about during this time, when I moved to Texas, our mom had cancer.
Oh, yes, right.
So about 6 months in, came home Christmas, and our mom passed away Christmas Day. And, you know, 6 months isn't long to know anyone, to get to know anyone. So went back to Texas, didn't know anyone. I was depressed, just grieving deeply. And, you know, it's true. Nobody can help you if they don't know what the problem is. It's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to church, and that first Sunday happened to be fast and testimony meeting. So I went, have I told you this story?
No, I don't think so.
I've told this story in therapy only, I think. So fast and testimony meeting, went to Relief Society, and they have testimony in Relief Society like the last 10 minutes. So I got up and I said, you know, I've been through a really horrible experience. My mom just died Christmas Day. You know, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I told them that, you know, I was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
Not one person ever said anything to me. Ever. I was with my sisters.
Unbelievable.
Nothing. That was truly, truly painful.
Whereas if you were in any other group of people that I can think of at work with a bunch of coworkers, or if you found yourself at some political sort of meeting, if you ever said and made the announcement that your mother just died.
It was literally like 4 days ago.
Then you would have a ton of people that would at least say, oh, I'm so sorry. That's give you a hug or at least pat on the arm or something. But no one said a single word.
Nothing. Ever.
Wow.
And you know, I don't have hard feelings for these women. You know, they made a really stupid mistake. What I do feel bad about is in the Mormon religion, you do not have the option to go somewhere healthy. You do not have the option to say, you know what? This ward is not a good fit for me. I'm not welcome. I'm not loved. You don't have the option. You have to stay.
No. Yeah, you can't. You can't.
I should have been able to say, you know what? I need to try somewhere else. And I should have been given that ability to do so. That's what I'm angry about still.
Hmm. Yep. But no choices.
No choices.
They say you're free to choose, but you're really not free to choose.
Even if it's unhealthy.
Yep.
So that was truly painful. But you know what? I believed. I still went to church every Sunday. I did not miss anything ever. It did not ever make me question my faith.
No.
So, you know, we had 3 more kids. Lived in Houston 13 years. It was a happy time. I had good friends in and out of the church. Still do. In Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the opportunity to move back to Utah. It's time to Salt Lake County. It's a good move just because it's close to her family.
And I was going, no, don't
Were you
do
really?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. But we came back and things continued normally for about 3 years. active member in church. And then one day, we talked a little bit about the mental illness our father has, and things kind of came to a head, and I had to go up to Idaho to basically rescue him. Ended up putting him in a mental hospital for the first time, became his power of attorney. And all of a sudden, when I go to church, I would hear my dad's delusions being recited from the pulpit, being taught in Sunday school. Just the same stuff he would say, he just spouted off from church, but it just started becoming, the best way I can experience is like post-traumatic stress disorder. My anxiety would rise when I'd hear people talking about things, and like, I just started not wanting to go to church. Just didn't want to be there. So one day, after a lesson in church about how we would all be gods someday, I was like, oh, I just got to figure this out. This is,
which is no longer being taught, by the way, as I understand.
That's what they say. But I'm telling you, this lesson was only about a year and a half ago, and it was from the manual.
So just recently, I think they made that change.
Well, in the last year and a half, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right. They did come out with that essay. That's true. They did. But this was a year and a half ago. They were still teaching it.
Right.
So I'm like, I got to figure this problem out. This is not working for me. So I thought, you know what? I will study church history. I will study like I've never studied before. I'm going to learn so much. So you were trying
to strengthen your testimony?
Yeah, I was going to strengthen my testimony. I was going to make what the church taught me much stronger than what my dad ever taught me, even though he was kind of just regurgitating church teachings.
Mixed with his crazy
with
talk.
With his craziness. Mm-hmm. I was just going to bulk up my testimony. So I got online to the library. I looked up church books, and I saw, oh, the history of the church. 7 volumes. It's Joseph Smith's teachings and writings. Can't do better than that, right?
Yeah.
So I went, and I was actually excited about it. I even took a picture of these 7 volumes sitting in my son's car seat. Took up the whole car seat. Like, this is what I'm going to learn. You know, this is going to be so amazing.
And you put it right on Facebook.
Do you remember that?
You really did? I was just joking.
I think I might have. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised. I am Mormon. Yeah. I put things on Facebook.
And I am learning even more. Okay. Wow. So you start going through those. What was the first thing that you went, what?
The first thing was the seer stone, Joseph Smith translating the scriptures from his hat. And I went, what? Now that's weird. But it wasn't alarming to me. I wasn't like, oh, I don't believe. I was like, that's really weird.
Does it say anything about the Urim and Thummim?
Not really, no.
No.
And I even looked. I'm like, what? What was the Urim and Thummim for anyway? I still don't know. Can anyone tell me what that is? I remember reading, I think it was his mother wrote some stuff, and she said that, you know, sometimes the plates would even be buried in the earth and Joseph Smith be translating from his hat. I'm like, well, what is the point of the golden plates if they're still stuck in the ground? I mean, it was just, it was weird. But it didn't, like, it didn't affect my belief at all.
Right.
I just was
you
like,
just thought it was a strange
that's
thing.
Really weird. And then I started reading about, I can't remember the years, I wish I could, but the church had released some kind of manifesto, a letter to the world that said that we do not believe in polygamy. We don't practice polygamy. We just don't do that. It's rumors, whatever that letter said.
Right.
And I looked at the date, and I knew that Joseph Smith had already been practicing polygamy. I thought, what? Come on. So that started, like, I was like, that's just, And then it told about Joseph Smith. He had given a sermon, and he had said in the sermon, he brought up polygamy and said that we need to start practicing this. And then they took a break, because back then the sermons lasted hours. So he taught, and then he took a break. And during this break, I guess people got really upset. What are you? No, we can't do this. So he got back on the pulpit or wherever he was at and said, he said, well, we don't practice polygamy yet, but someday we may, because if we ever go to different countries and we teach them Mormonism, they might say, well, we're polygamists, so we can't be your religion because, you know, we have multiple wives. And we can say, you know what? We believe in that too. So you can be part of our religion. We will be, we believe together.
That was the reason?
That was his reason.
Hmm. And I never heard that one before.
Yeah. I was like, what? What? Because that just sounded just fake to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just sounded made up. Like, oh, how can I fix this? Let me think of something really quick. Another thing that bothered me was when I found out he had been a treasure digger.
Mm-hmm.
That to me just, I'm sorry, I know people get offended, but it just seemed like a con man.
Mm-hmm.
And then to find out that he used the same seer stone to hunt for treasure as he found the scriptures and translated the scriptures, the golden plates. To make this a short story, those seven volumes caused me to lose my faith and testimony in 48 hours. It was fast, people. I think I'm the fastest I've met yet.
Wow. Congratulations.
I went from total belief to spinning. Hmm. Got on the phone, called counselor. I got into therapy right away.
Right away. Good for you. So you didn't, prior to that, and then the stuff about our dad, that you hadn't had any other thoughts about, wait, this can't be right.
When I went through the temple the first time, the closest I can get to that, saying that's not right, is, oh, I forgot to talk about this. When we decided to, you know, we can finally go to the temple because we've repented. I guess we repented. Nobody ever told me.
Mm-hmm.
I was told I needed to go to the temple preparation class.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only time I've ever heard of this happening. It was in somebody's house. It was me only with John. Mm-hmm. And no one else. We were in Logan, Utah. Do you know how many students are in Logan, Utah that are Mormon? Do you know how many people go on get married every month in Logan, Utah? You know, I may be wrong, but John and I truly feel that because of our mistake, we were kept secret. We were hidden from everyone. I've never even heard of people having temple preparation in anyone else's house. It's always been in a church or somewhere. I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong because I've been asking around, but
right.
I think we are kept hidden.
Because they didn't want you in a group class or something saying anything that would make anyone think that you had...
Well, that I could repent and everything would be okay. Don't let them think you can have sex and it will be okay.
Right.
Because you can let them think that.
Because it's not okay. It'll never be okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and the class was weird because I expected to learn stuff in temple preparation class. It was like 3 days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
3 hours, whatever. Three different times. And I just came back out of it thinking, I have not learned anything new. Why is there a temple preparation class? I have not learned a single thing I haven't known my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
It was just odd. Then we go to the temple. And I know people have horrific experiences from it. Like some people are traumatized by it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, but I just kept thinking, wait, well, you're told everything's secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to learn things you've never learned before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait, isn't this Genesis? Wait, right. You can read this in the Bible, right? Wait, I knew this. This is a secret. I didn't understand it.
Hmm.
But again, you're taught every time you go, you'll understand more and more. So, and then I was also taught that you could, some people see angels in the temple. So I was looking.
You were hoping for something looking. Like that. Come on, angel.
And I'd be like, are they an angel over there? Are they supposed to be here?
Am I seeing an angel right now?
And then I remember, I hope I don't upset too many people. I probably will, but I remember thinking, wait, these handshakes? I have to know you have to have handshakes to get in heaven. I can't remember these. I can't get into heaven because I cannot remember the handshakes. Like, crap, I've repented, I've done everything, and now I can't remember the handshake. It did fill me with a lot of anxiety and fear.
That's why you have to keep going back, so it's embedded in your mind forever.
I guess so.
I still remember them.
Good for you.
It's been a long time. And so, anyway. All right. So then what did you do after those 48 hours of enlightenment? Besides go to a therapist, did you just like decide to slowly continue going to church, or did you slowly start backing out, or what?
Never went back to church again.
Never. That was it. You were done.
I was done. Never went back.
Not one single time.
I've been back for a baby blessing and a couple missionary farewells, returns.
But not to your own ward.
Not to my own. I did go back to sacrament meeting a few times because of family things.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'll get into that, but no, never went back. Never been to Relief Society again. Never went to Sunday school again. Nothing. I was done. Done. And I do want to point out, I lost my faith by reading church books.
Right.
I did not ever look at anything that people would think was anti-Mormon. Did not hear anything anti-Mormon.
You didn't watch anything online or listen to any podcasts or anything?
No podcast, no YouTube.
Nothing.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how sheltered I was till later because I'd never seen anything or heard anything ever. I read church books, lost my faith.
Yep.
Mormon history did it for me.
Well, it's surprising. I'm not surprised now, but at one time I would have been very surprised to hear that and to know that there are lots of people like you who have left for just the same reason. Not that they've gotten involved with anybody or been influenced by any other groups or anything. It's just they read church literature.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to say, I know that people in the church find comfort. They'll say, oh, well, she never had a testimony anyway. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I had a strong enough testimony that I humiliated myself to be where I needed to be, do what I needed to do. I never questioned any of it. You want me to hide in secrecy? Okay, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You want me to do whatever church calling? Okay, I'll do it. I gave everything to a church that had never, ever been honest with me.
Right.
Another thing that really threw me is polyandry. Whoa, that was big. Mm-hmm. When I found that out. But anyway. Mm-hmm. So I never went back to church again. My husband has always been very supportive. He's never told me to go to church. He's never told me, don't do Mormon Expression, don't listen to never anything. He's just been very supportive through it all. I won't talk much about where he is, just for his, he's a very private person.
Well, you're lucky.
I am lucky.
You're lucky, yeah.
I am lucky. One thing I do want to talk about is if you listen to our first recording about our father, one thing that was very traumatizing for me as a child is the belief that my dad wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, so we weren't going to be an eternal family. I was going to lose them all. You take a person that lost her faith in 48 hours and tell her she's going to cause the same trauma to her children. That is hard. Even if I think it through rationally and realize, you know what, that's not what's going to happen. That pain and that fear is there. Not that I don't have fear that I'm going to lose my family. I have fear that my kids are going to feel the way I did. I know they have. That's what this religion that tells you family is important above all. That's what they do to families. They fill them with fear and terror.
It's cruel and manipulative.
It's abusive. So the trauma I had as a child, I have done my best to protect my children from it, but it's there.
And even through therapy, which has helped you immensely.
It's helped me immensely. I hope it's helped me with my kids. But it's It's ongoing. I've only been out of the church about a year and a half.
Do you see them adjusting?
Yeah, some easier than others. Nobody at church has ever approached me about not going to church. No one's ever asked me any questions. Nothing.
No one ever said, hey, what's going on?
The only closest they got was they came to my house and they offered me the dream calling that I always wanted in Young Women's. I love Young Women's. So he said, you know, we want to call you in Young Women's. And I was like, oh, I won't do that. I can't do that. And he said, well, you know what? If you can think of a calling you want, any calling, you let me know and we'll give it to you.
How about elders quorum president?
Somebody said, why didn't you ask to be the bishop?
Right.
So that's the closest it came to. But let me tell you this. They don't care about me. They want my kids. They are after my children.
Why do you think?
I have three future missionaries. I have three children that I know as a member. I believed that if parents were teaching their kids the right way, it's our responsibility, you know, give them that option, give them that opportunity. It's hard to talk about too much because I do want to respect my children's privacy. But there did come a time where my 12-year-old, it was time for him to be ordained into the priesthood. Okay, I'm going to talk about this because it is cruel and it's mean and I don't want it to be a secret. They called my husband in. They don't talk to me anymore. Nobody talks to me anymore. Because I did tell them once, they did come to my house and try to pick up my kids before church. And I told them not to do that. That if they want to go to church, I would get them there. Mm-hmm. So that was, nobody tries to talk to me anymore. So they called my husband. He went in to talk to the counselor and he said, you know, the bishop has advised us that if you want your son to be ordained into the priesthood, you and your wife need to come to church for 2 months. You cannot miss any meetings. You have to be there all 3 hours. And if you can do that for 2 months, then we'll consider ordaining your son. And this is how manipulative that church is, this religion is. My son, my 12-year-old innocent child, is waiting in the waiting room. They call him in. And they say, you know what? We want to make you in the priesthood, but your family needs to come to church. Come on, people. You're manipulating my behaviors around my 12-year-old child's emotions.
How did he react to that? Did he react outwardly?
He, you know, he's the kind of kid that sometimes will blow up. It's, and you don't really know until it happens, but he came in and my husband said, so do you want to go to church? Because church was like in a couple hours. And he said, no. So I was kind of like, oh, well, I guess I don't really have to worry about this. But then over time, he did once become a deacon. We didn't allow ourselves to be controlled. We didn't go to church. And they did decide to ordain him.
Anyway,
after several months, like 6 months he's been. And he was ordained. And, you know, I know as a child it made me feel important.
Right.
It made my son feel important. He's passed the sacrament a few times. Mm-hmm. That's one reason I have gone to church to support him in that.
Right.
But we'll see where he goes. He doesn't show too much interest in going. I have another son who seems to be amplifying his devotion to the church. I wonder if it's in fear of what could happen, but I don't know. We'll leave it at that because I don't want to talk too much about that.
Mm-hmm. How about your daughter? Did they try to go after her?
Not really. Oh, another thing I wanted to talk about when we went to have my son ordained, I was looking everyone in the eye. I was like, look at me. Talk to me.
And they wouldn't.
Nobody did. They would shake my hand and say, hi, how are you? Nobody looked me in the eye. Nothing. I was just, I don't really know why, except maybe I feel they don't really care what the mother thinks. They talk to my husband. They ask him what he thinks. They ask what he wants to do. Nobody's ever asked me what I want. And I, you know, I wasn't emotional at all until I left that church building. I thought, nobody gives a damn about me. Anyway, but at the same time, I do have to say that the people on my street, the people I come across every day, they've always been kind to me. I've never received any unkindness from anyone.
Right.
We're still friends.
Out on the street.
Yeah, on the street. Mm-hmm. And if I see them anywhere, it's...
Right.
I'm happy to see them. They're happy to see me.
Right.
I've never had anyone keeping their kids away from me or anything that.
Good for them.
But there is no genuine concern.
They're not taught. They're not trained. We weren't taught or trained how to deal with someone who's left the church. It made us very uncomfortable. Uncomfortable.
Yes.
It was just like so foreign. And you're taught that those things that they're doing, since they're outside of the church, are so heinous that you just can't have anything to do with that.
You're taught you won't be happy if you leave the church. Oh, people that aren't in the church are not happy.
Well, and you're not even supposed to associate with that because you want to avoid all appearance of evil, unless, of course, it's in a missionary capacity, perhaps. But when I was excommunicated, nobody ever said another word to me either. Nothing from anybody. There were people that I knew, again, that in my ward that I knew outside of the church, and they were okay. But as far as an official capacity, nobody ever said a word after that.
Don't ever look them in the eye again.
Yeah. No, they didn't want to. So how do you feel now? Now that that's a little bit behind you. I mean, it's still all so fresh.
It is fresh. I got therapy. I had 6 months of private therapy. Then I also, through Whitefields, had a therapy with my husband, with one of their faith transition groups. I'm a strong advocate for therapy. If your therapist is not working, go find another one.
That's huge.
You will find somebody.
Yep.
I am a strong believer in that. I think that's probably why I can put myself on Mormon Expression Voices, because I really believe people need to have a voice.
And that's why you do this?
That's the main reason. I still have fear. People say, oh, you're so brave for doing it. No, I'm afraid all the time.
Of retaliation of some sort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'll go away, though, I think. That'll lessen quite a bit, probably.
Hopefully.
That fear of retaliation.
Hopefully. One thing I have found really interesting is I didn't realize how numb I really was in the church.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never known any other feelings. Now that I've been removed for a little while, my joys and my happiness are so much more. But on the flip side, my pain and my sorrows are deep.
They're stronger.
Yeah.
It's because you're feeling your own emotions, perhaps.
Good point. Never thought of that
way. And not emotions that someone's telling you should have, or some more emotions that have been manufactured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could be.
I felt the same way.
There's a funny story you probably remember. I know you remember because you teased me about it. When I was little, I really felt close to God or whatever, you know, it would be. Mm-hmm. And one day I was just crying and you were like, what's wrong with you? And I just said, oh, I feel so close to God. You remember that? You do, because you've made
fun
of me.
Did I make fun?
Oh, you still do make fun of me about that.
No. Yes. Not about that. Other things, sure, but not
even
that.
Don't even. I know what you're going to say. Don't.
No, I won't.
Anyway.
So I felt those same feelings. I mean, we just talked about Saturday's Warrior, right? How I bawled and bawled at Saturday's Warrior.
So anyway, as a child, those spiritual feelings were really intense. And then it lessened and lessened. And then after I went through with my daughter's birth, it was completely gone. Now that I've been out for a year and a half, those feelings are coming back. And I don't even know. I do believe in God still.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what that God exactly is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? It feels good to say, I don't have to know.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Yep.
Because if God wanted us to know, and if he thought it was that important, I think he would give us something better to know. I think it's more fluid than we've been taught.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it's good to know that I don't have to figure it out.
Absolutely. And if you feel a certain way, it's because you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. And that it's okay to feel the way you do, and you don't have to be ashamed or feel bad or guilty about feeling the way that you feel.
Yep. So there it is.
There it is, everybody.
There's the quick overview of my story.
That's Katrine's story.
It's not quite as fascinating as yours.
Oh, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's very important. Everyone needs to hear it, I think. And I'm glad that you're doing this. I feel like I have a celebrity sister. Anything you want to add, sis?
A celebrity sister, that's funny. No, nothing I want to add. I don't think. I'll probably think of something later, but whatever.
You can always patch that in, right?
I can always patch that in.
Right.
Okay, this would be the part where I'm going to patch something in. First of all, I want to apologize for sounding so tired. When I am editing this, I can't believe how tired I sound. I'm slurring my words. I can't seem to think clearly. We were actually having a family celebration all week, and Jason and I slipped away during it to record each other. And by the time we finished it, it was actually 1:30 in the morning. So I was tired, and I was having a hard time completing a sentence, as you may have be able to tell. I also wanted to talk about something that happened while I was in Texas. While I lived there, there was the raid on the FLDS. And because of my Mormon background and because I was just fascinated with polygamy, I paid a lot of attention to the news stories. I listened to everything I could. I read many articles. I read several books. And I just kind of submerged myself into what the FLDS believed and what their practices were. At the end of all that, I thought, you know, if my church ever did these things or ever tried to convince me to live this way, I would be gone. I would not participate in something that is so damaging to individuals, to men, but especially to women and children. I would just not be in that church any longer. The disturbing thing is that Joseph Smith and Warren Jeffs have a lot in common. Just a few of these things are how young their wives were. Joseph Smith's youngest wife was 14, and Warren Jeffs' youngest wife was 12. Many of these marriages were arranged through family members, and the girls weren't even asked what they thought or felt about a marriage with an older man. And they would use a lot of pressure and coercion to convince these children to marry these older men, such as, if you marry us, your salvation is guaranteed, your family will be eternal. Just a lot of pressure to get these girls to comply. I found disturbing the mother-daughter pairs that were married to Joseph Smith and Warren Jeffs or do not like any religion that's cloaked in behavior or secrecy, and then denial to be used to hide these things. I found that both Joseph Smith and Warren Jeffs used to hid a lot of their behavior in secrecy and denial. They would keep secrets, and then once a secret is out, they would deny it. And I just do not wish that to be in a leader or a prophet. I just can't imagine God working that way. When I had finally compared the two, I thought, well, I said I wouldn't stay in this religion. I said I would be gone. But you know, the church doesn't really practice these things anymore. But let's just say, for example, my son made a chocolate cake for a fair, and he actually took the grand prize with this chocolate cake. It's a really, really moist, delicious chocolate cake. And I have a friend who I gave it to her family a couple times, and she just loved this cake, and she kept asking me for the recipe because she just loved it so much. So I finally gave her the recipe, and she was shocked to find that you use a devil's food cake mix, and you use a chocolate pudding mix, and you use sour cream in the recipe. And she was kind of horrified because I wasn't using cake flour, and I wasn't using my own chocolate bars, and it wasn't made from scratch. And she just felt that that wasn't a true chocolate cake, that a true chocolate cake would be everything from scratch. She no longer will eat this cake, and she doesn't make the cake, and she feels that it's kind of a fraud. Well, it's the same in this instance. Now that I know what this religion is made from, to me it's now a fraud. I can't eat that cake, or I can't live the religion anymore once I know what it's truly made of. We will go back to the rest of the recording.
I do believe everyone has a voice. It's your story. It's not the church's story. You can feel what you want to feel. You can say what you want to say. And I know I say that now, but I have my own issues with family and stuff where I do want to be respectful of people. And I don't. My mission is not to get people out of the church.
Right.
I just want people to know that if they want out, it's okay. That they have the right to choose that.
Good message.
Do I sound self-righteous?
No, you don't.
Okay.
You sound indignant.
Indignant.
And you sound determined.
But do I sound sexy?
I've always thought you sound so sexy on warm expression voices. Is that weird for me to say?
That's kind of creepy.
Well, thank you for joining us, Katrine. I really appreciate you coming on warm expression voices.
Thank you, Jason.
If you'd like to appear on Mormon Expression Voices, you can go ahead and email Katrine at
voices@mormonexpression.com.
And anything else I'm supposed to say at the end of an interview?
If you want to give money.
Oh, right.
For therapy.
Yes.
Or other good resources to Whitefields, go ahead and visit Whitefields website. If you donate to therapy, 100% of those proceeds go to therapists to help people that need therapy and can't afford it. 100% doesn't go to anything else if you want to donate for therapy.
Excellent. Otherwise, there is no charge for the group therapy?
I'm not sure how all that works out. Please contact Lindsay at Whitefield. She can help you with all of that. I don't know the details. You can also donate directly to Mormon Expression or Mormon Expression Voices because it does cost money to keep these podcasts going. And
right.
It's helped me, and so I think it's important.
Okay. Well, this has been really fun. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Jason.
Bye, Katrine.
You want to come sleep at my house tonight?
Okay, let's go.
All right, bye.
Bye.